Excellent. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Talk to Danielle podcast. I am your host, Danielle Steve Baker. And before we get started, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. And of course, with season two, this episode is brought to you by the Self-Esteem Doctor Online Academy with the amazing Dr. Simone Alicia. She has a wealth of resources on that website to help with your child's self-esteem and confidence and so much more. So I'll leave the link in the description so you can have a look at it. I highly recommend it. And today, again, another amazing guest. I'm really excited about this. I have the lovely Michelle Weeger with us. She has a book that just came out. She's been at the top of the charts with her book. So it says, Don't Snooze Your Dreams. So essentially what life is like with narcolepsy. And we may see Quinn pop up. Her service dog is just, oh, there she is, the superstar. I just imagine she must have been like, hey, wait.
That's my
I can be in the spotlight. So I'm going to put the spotlight on Michelle, and thank you so much for joining me and just kind of give us a little bit of your story as to how you got to where you are today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
This is Quinn, the service dog. Normally, I don't mention her until a bit later in the story, but, you know, when the star shows up, you got to address it.
So, that's it.
So now, today, I'm successful business owner, best-selling author, keynote speaker, and life is pretty great. But for years, I struggled with extreme exhaustion, the type that if you've ever had the flu and you go to sleep because you're so tired and you wake up hours later, you're still just as tired. That is one of the best ways you can describe narcolepsy to the average person. Except for me, that wake up just as tired is every time, every day, forever. From the day it started until, well, there is no cure. So.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, and that's something, I mean, we've had a chance to talk about this a bit. And of course, I read your book, so I've got a lot of the backstory, but it's something that's diagnosed later on in the teens and early adult years. And you were saying it's like a 15-year process to get your diagnosis or something like that. So you go through a lot of what is wrong with me in that time span, I'm sure. Can you kind of explain to a little bit of some of the symptoms that you had at, like, what made it that at one point you're like, this is more than just being tired. There's something else there. Can you kind of guide us through that?
Absolutely. So part of why I'm excited to be on this particular show is because narcolepsy symptoms typically start in your late teens, early 20s. And that means that parents, you still have a grasp on your child's life. You still see a lot of what's going on in those time periods. Even if they've moved out for university or college, you know what's going on. And it takes an average of 15 years to get diagnosed. So if you think about the fact that in your late teens, you're barely 15 years old anyways, as much of your life you've already lived could then be struggling to find out answers. For me, I was diagnosed in my early 20s and I'm now 34. So 15 years, I wouldn't even be diagnosed yet if I was the average statistic. And that means everything I've done and accomplished in the last 12 years, none of it would have been possible. Because when you're just trying to physically get out of your bed because you keep falling asleep, or out of your couch, or out of a public bus, or everywhere else you fall asleep, you don't have a chance to thrive. You're just trying to survive, literally and figuratively, at that point. The symptoms to look out for, while there are many outside of just the sleepiness, it's the most obvious one. So we all have times we're tired, but if someone you love is saying that they're just as tired after they wake up as when they went to sleep, or on the worst days, I'm more tired when I wake up. I will never get used to that feeling. Because I do remember normal from when I was in my early teens and childhood. Sometimes I wish I didn't. It'd be easier if I couldn't compare, right?
Right. Yeah.
But that debilitating sleepiness where if you have a moment of, doesn't have to be quietness, just non-stimulation. So the phone is down. If you're a passenger in the car and you're falling asleep every time, if your child can't get through a movie, I say your teen, young adult, or because a lot of people don't get diagnosed until much later in life, it could be your partner or your best friend.
Yeah. That is, yeah, it's true because I know personally, but I know a lot of people will say that the image that we have in narcolepsy is just somebody that'll just drop on the floor all of a sudden, you know, like it's just snap and you're out. It's not quite like that all the time.
Exactly.
It's like continuous, always tired. So
yeah,
that's
exactly. So that image, the comedic one, it's one of the other symptoms, which is cataplexy. It's a temporary muscle paralysis caused by, they'll say strong emotions, but things like laughter, anger, surprise. And one of the theories of what's happening is that because of how sleep deprived you are, your brain is actually interpreting those things as dreams. And when we're dreaming, we can't move. Our bodies paralyze us for safety, because if we all acted out our dreams, we'd be hurt. And so the most severe cases have full body cataplexy. That's that what you'd think was asleep, but you're actually awake when it happens. And those cases are a lot easier to get diagnosed because that is so obviously not normal to anyone who's watching. For me, one of my biggest cataplexies is if I laugh very hard. I'm talking, you know, surprise dad joke from across the room. You know, you don't see it coming. That belly laugh. Okay. My legs give out and I fall on the floor, which makes it really hard to tell my husband he's not funny, because there's physical proof he is, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
Right? But I thought that that was normal. I didn't even tell doctors about that, because now that I've mentioned it, you're going to see it. Things like soap operas or reality TV shows or football players, after they score an incredible touchdown that's going to win the game, they'll often fall down. It's a dramatic effect thing that they're doing comedically, I think. But when I saw that, my brain just went, yeah, of course, everyone does that. Me too.
Right. I never
saw
that.
So different body parts, different emotions. But that one's so much harder to see until you have the bigger picture, because when you just can't stay awake ever, that is the prime concern. Nothing else really matters.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm seeing a different side of things now. It's just like, in the case of your husband, it is a lose-lose situation, because you can't not, you know, you can't pretend that he's not that funny. Or if you don't actually fall to the ground, then he's not funny. You know,
oh,
and
he
might take that personally. Say, well, what? How come you're not on the floor right now? This was a funny joke, right?
So he's like, that was funny. I'm like, was it though? And then he'll say something else that's way funnier, and then I always fall down. So, you know, I'm at a point, I'm very lighthearted about it all. The first time that a friend manages to do it, they're always very excited. You know, it's typically men who are like, I'm funny, how come you never fall down? I'm like, but are you funny?
You know, I love that you're the meter, kind of says, yeah, let's pass the test on Michelle. That's just not right. What would you say is the most, this is kind of things that people don't talk about. They talk about how they cope, but what is one of the most challenging things you could go through before you get the diagnosis? You know, when you're in that phase where you're told that basically the team that's working with you is told, we don't know, there's something, but we don't know what it is. Like, what are those challenges? So people can feel kind of normal in this moment where they don't feel normal. Yeah. What kind of challenges could you be facing?
So I think it's a lot like most diagnoses. When you don't know what's going on, you know your body, you know when something's off. You may not know what it is, but you know. And a lot of times, especially with healthcare for women, we're, for me, they wanted me to get iron tests, thyroid tests, and do the depression quiz. And that made sense. Those are common things. I was 17 years old when I first went to the doctor to get answers. And I'm glad they did that. You should always start with the most common things. That's good medicine. What became frustrating for me and challenging was that after those all came back as normal, the next step for them was then going back to testing thyroid again and iron again. And are you sure you're not depressed now? Because now it's winter. So let's do that quiz again. And that was, it almost makes you feel a bit gaslit, where you know there's something really wrong, but you're being put through the exact same steps by the exact same doctors. Yeah. Why? You know, we're in Canada, our healthcare system's overtaxed as is. That does not need to be happening. Can we please move to whatever is the next thing? And we're now in an internet era where we as adults or parents can find out a lot online and bring that forward. At that time, though, there was no ChatGPT, there was no WebMD, there were no Facebook groups at all, never mind for medicine. So the feeling of being dismissed, oh, come back in a few months if it's still happening. And what am I supposed to do in the meantime?
Yeah, I think that's got to be the hardest thing, where you're just like, but I'm still living with those symptoms during those 2 months. So is there anything else that we could do? That's hard. That kind of brings me to the next question, is because you mentioned some, when it starts in the teens, the parents are noticing it, the friends are noticing it, the partners are noticing it. What message or advice would you have for those parents who are just feel like they're not getting anywhere with clear answers or anything like that? Do you have anything for them?
I think, with a lot of illness, narcolepsy in particular, it can look like other things, right? If a teenager who was a high performer in school all of a sudden starts falling asleep in school, a lot like, the iron, the thyroid, depression, there's other things that need to be looked at as well. Even if you as the parent might think it's not potentially drugs, or are they staying up all night texting or online with someone they shouldn't be, or other things. So starting with those most common things, even if you don't think it's your situation, great. Document that so that when you do go to professionals, you can say, hey, look, we know it's not this and this. Here's how I can prove that. You'll be able to skip past a lot of the garbage, or maybe you find out that your teen, look, they've got themselves in a bad spot, and you'll be able to help them out, or your friends. And, for me, I was so afraid that people would think I was drinking or doing drugs or in a bad relationship. Even when I was single, I was afraid of that I was really insulating myself. I didn't have the energy to do much. But even after I was diagnosed, before I was public about what was going on, I was so afraid of being judged by people. It didn't even come as a thought to me that I would find not only support, but a whole world of people who were going through their own things, who were happy to have someone else to share their experiences with. And, keep advocating. If you know something's wrong, keep advocating. It's not going to go away. In my case, it's definitely not going to go away, but rarely do these things at all. And do that at all ages of your life. Our bodies change from when it's your own child you're looking at, through teenagehood with hormones, then your young adult, after you've had your own child, going into perimenopause, right? Bodies change. You know your body and you know your child better than anyone. So when you know something's wrong, don't be afraid to push. If one doctor dismisses you, find another. I wasted a lot of time going to the same ex-military family doctor over and over and over again. And it was after I changed, after I had someone suggest, look, you need to get a sleep study. That doctor would have never said yes to a sleep study. There's just no way. But the next one did.
That's such a good advice. Advocating is definitely a thing I noticed. I've been working with children. their families are in it. It's getting supporting that parent to say, keep going. You know your child, or you know your body for yourself. Keep advocating. You know something's wrong. There's more to it. So we kind of, especially in Canada, I don't know if it's because a lot of our healthcare is free that we kind of don't want to ask questions. So you're just like, okay, thanks, you know, and you just kind of, but keep pushing because there is something there. There's,
whatever it is, if it's affecting you or your child's life, it has to be figured out.
I'm going to throw you for a loop because I didn't, I wasn't going to ask this question, but I think it's so important to notice because you got your diagnosis early, you know, and it is a heavy diagnosis. I mean, it's for life. I mean, you have to cope with it. And I'm going to ask about how you cope with it later. That was one of the questions, but you're thriving right now in your life. You're doing what you love. You could tell, like, I mean, I see your speeches. I see it. Like, you're so full of energy and you're loving it. And Quinn is a superstar along with you. And I'm just wondering if can you share, I think you mentioned it as well in the book. I'm going to plug the book in this one, but a lot of people could have just said, I'm just going to stay in my parents' basement for the rest of my life. Right. You kind of don't know what else are you supposed to do. Right. But you turned this around and made it something else. Can you kind of give that moment of positivity for people? And it doesn't have to be for narcolepsy, but for any diagnosis,
for anything.
You can choose to stay it there, or you can make the best of it and get yourself out of that dark.
So any diagnosis or any life circumstance. So I often say when I'm speaking to larger groups, like, you probably don't have narcolepsy. You know, 1 in 2,000 people do, especially when it's a room of 700 people. Chances are I'm the only one. Swap narcolepsy for whatever you're facing, whether it's a health condition or you're a caregiver, a bad marriage, maybe your childhood was traumatic. Everyone has something. So swap in your something when you hear me say narcolepsy in these examples, and hopefully it can help you as well. So for me, I believe in looking at what the true worst case of a decision is. I think a lot of people are paralyzed by fear. It's a huge part of my book is that concept and how you can beat fear. And for me, when I was diagnosed, I had thankfully finished school. And, you know, but my plans of being a doctor or a pilot were both off the table. As stubborn as I am, there are certain lines that have to be respected.
Yes.
Maybe not a bus driver either, right? So I needed to figure out something. And for me, I decided to start a business. Worst case scenario, if I failed epically, the situation I was in at the time was living in my mom's, well, upstairs technically. And I always joke my mom's basement, but it was unfinished. There's no way she would have put me down there. But it's all figurative, right? Like, worst case scenario, if I failed epically, I would be in the same spot I was now. I would be in her house without a job, being grateful that they were paying for everything. That was the worst case of taking the chance. There was no downside. Anything better than the absolute worst case was still better.
Yeah.
And I often get these questions, particularly from young people when I speak at colleges or universities. They say, oh, like, I have big dreams, but nothing like what you're doing. Like, how did you know all this was possible for you back then?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. I was just trying to get out of my mom's house. I love my mom. She is the best. I think it's a huge, huge, huge part, her support of why I am who I am, and my dad too. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to live in their house forever. That's all I wanted at first. Yeah. And then, you know, I got a part-time job waitressing as I started my business, because when you're running around literally on your feet all day and all night, you actually can't fall asleep. So I'd be given the craziest sections and the busiest that nobody else wanted to do because it would be so exhausting for them. But for me, it allowed me to thrive in that role and fill a void where everyone loved working with me. So although I would always doze off when it became time at the end of the night to wrap up the cutlery for the next day, everyone let it go because I was the one who, anytime they said, hey, Michelle, can you get, yeah, I'm going. I don't even listen or wait to hear what they want me to get. Yeah, I did that. And I at first just wanted to make enough money to care for my own basic things. And mm-hmm. I did that. And then I just wanted to make enough to have my own apartment with a roommate. And it wasn't a nice one, but it was mine. And I did that. And then I wanted to grow my business to the point where I would only have to work on weekends, where the rest of it, we work in waitressing, I should say. I still work a whole heck of a lot in my business to this day and hope to always. But each thing was just, you know, what's the next single goal? A little bit bigger and a little bit more. And anytime I was afraid, I would look at what's the true worst case scenario. And I built mm-hmm. in safety nets on all of those. I know it's very glamorous, especially in the online business world. You'll see gurus saying, oh, if you're serious, you go all in, use your credit card to buy this expensive training that I sell, and you quit your full-time stable job and you just go all in. Mm-hmm. No, you don't. You don't. Yeah. You don't sabotage yourself like that. You create a little safety net and take a single step forward. And each of those little steps builds confidence. The girl who started a business without really knowing anything about business is eons away from the woman I am now, who is eons away from what will be. Right. But it's all the series of small steps.
I love that. And it's attainable. The way you're breaking it down is just start with the absolute epic fail. I like that. What's your epic fail? And then let's build from there. Because again, right. What's your rock bottom of rock bottom? And then let's move up. Anything above that is great. It's success. So, mm-hmm. And I like that. Don't sabotage yourself. Just go with what you can handle and what you can do. Absolutely yeah. Love it. Focus on what you're good at. That's basically what you're saying. You were great in the crazy section of the mm-hmm. restaurant. And, I just like that. Focus on what you're great at. And mm-hmm. I wanted that. That's the question I wanted to ask you first, though, but is because I follow you on social media. So I see you, especially in the last few months, you're kind of everywhere. You think you've done the whole of North America in the span of a couple. Yeah, a lot of people, again, because I'm on the outside looking at it going, she must be exhausted. Like, she must be tired. I've seen pictures of you on the plane with Quinn and you're both sleeping on the seats. And it's just like, how are you able to take care of yourself in these moments? And what do you have like markers or I don't know what, like when you know that it's time to kind of step back and recharge your battery or like, how do you, what are your coping mechanisms to handle that kind of high mm-hmm. high maintenance and high not maintenance but you know high rolling
go
lifestyle
from the end of August to the middle of November I was home only one weekend in that entire time period. Wow. To give context to those who aren't yet following me on social media, but you should because the dog pictures are adorable.
It
was exhausting, absolutely exhausting. And mm-hmm. what I did is, as cheesy as it is, it's self-care, but not the bubble baths and spa days self-care. To me, it's having a support network and prioritizing what truly matters. So for example, I cut in half the number of available sales calls for my website development and automation business because we didn't need that extra revenue. With the speaking side and the book side generating money, it wasn't necessary. Sure, it would have mm-hmm. felt great to make even more money. Best month ever. But right. that was not the priority during this period. This last period is the height of conferences and speaking engagements in the entire year in Canada mm-hmm. and the US. So I needed to prioritize where the energy went. And what that looks like week to week, certainly month to month, is not the same. I also do something called drug vacations, we call it. So it's a day okay. where I don't take any narcolepsy medicine. I'm going to post a picture from my watch, I think, one day, where it shows the like 14 hours of sleep. that those days have, because that's what it's like without medicine for narcolepsy. Wow. And what that allows is it makes sure the medicine stays working as strong as it can, which is important for the long term. It's good, mm-hmm. better for the heart as well for me. And I prioritize that rest day above anything else. So when I get messages from my best friend saying, hey, this board game store we love is having a sale and they got new puzzles, like, let's go. Of course I want to go. I want to go so badly. But I can't. I have to prioritize what matters the most. And if I burn out, I'm not going to be able to do anything for anyone. And the repercussions of that would be huge. And I think the same applies for everyone. You know, you're not going to have a 14-hour sleep day, but whatever your equivalent of the true, deep, restful recharge, it has to happen regularly. And it has to happen even more so when you're in a particularly stressful or busy time in the rest of your life.
Yeah. Well, that's good and advice.
If the people in your life, your support network, if they're not allies in that, then they're not your support network. And that is a whole other conversation.
They're not your people. That's the hard part, is to have to let go of certain friendships. But you're so right. And it is, at the end of the day, it's you and how you're feeling, right? So you do have to make those decisions. But that's sound advice. Thank you for sharing that, because it's a lot. And people don't realize what you go through on a day-to-day. So you need to have that support. I love it. A lot of people like to go at it alone. They don't want to, you know, advertise or the advocate or talk about it. So yeah,
I think it's one of those fears is asking for help that people have. Mm-hmm. I'll often hear people use the language, I don't want to inconvenience other people.
Right. Yeah.
But realistically, that's actually, it's a cop-out. Because when I hear someone say that, what I really hear them say is, I'm afraid that if I do reach out, the people around me don't value me enough to prioritize my needs. I'm worried that I'm an inconvenience.
Right.
Is that really true? In most cases, it isn't. Almost always, it isn't. And if it is true, you've got to find some new allies in your life.
Yeah. A lot of the times, people are just waiting for you to ask for help. They're not going to force it on you. So.
Oh, for sure. People don't want you to think that, you know, they don't think you're good enough or doing enough. They have fears of that. It's everyone's inside their own heads with their own fears. And if we are just honest with the people we love and trust, beautiful things almost always happen.
Yeah. From my experience, when I did start asking for help for certain things, I was always surprised that the people that I expected wouldn't help were the first ones that dropped everything. And then
Isn't that interesting? I
just assumed did have my back, and then realized that no, they only have my back when I got theirs, or not even sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's surprising when you start asking for help, you get to see who's really there for you. So it's a good
weddings.
Practice to get.
Mm-hmm. It is a good practice. Yeah. Weddings are typically when people find this out. It's typically the first time you're forced to ask for help. You know, you within the structure of a wedding, there's all these roles for different people. And once you start asking, you find out really quickly who it is that actually has your back, as you said, Danielle. And I think it's a lot better when you can know that information outside of a crisis or stress situation. By simply engaging in it day to day. And, you know, I believe in the power of role models. I've found so many times that when I ask someone for help and they're so happy to help, and then they start asking other people for help too, because they got to feel how great it feels to be that type of support. And it helps to break down their fears of asking for others to help.
Yeah, that's a good thing. You pay it forward, and it's wonderful. I like that. Is there any advice that you'd like to share you wish you would have had sooner that would have made your life a little easier? We talked about asking for help as definitely one, but is there some type of advice you wish you would have known? Something you would have known sooner?
Find someone who is 10 years older, someone else who's 10 years younger, and someone who's 10 steps ahead of you in one area of your life. And nurture those relationships. Give to them as much as you can and soak up what they can share with you. Because those three people, oh my goodness, I am so grateful I have them. And they change throughout life, especially the 10 steps. So much of what I've accomplished, I didn't even know was a possibility until I had someone talking about their life and sharing what they did. So a tangible example of that is my 10 Steps Ahead mentor. She and her husband had bought this beautiful, beautiful waterfront house, and they had no mortgage on it. And they're in their early 50s. And I know some people, right? I know some people without a mortgage, but early 50s, and they'd have done it a few years prior.
Wow.
And so just asked, how did you do that? And she'd, you know, less than a decade earlier had the typical giant mortgage on a giant house that had more rooms than people. And we're looking at renovating it to make it even bigger because that's just what you do. And then she found out how much money having a long-term mortgage actually is, that you buy the house over multiple times.
Yeah.
And they sold the house and bought something way smaller that they then learned how to do repairs on, and they had no mortgage. So when they sold that house, they could buy a better one. And again, and again. And I'd seen TV shows about that stuff. Like there's a whole TV channel, right? But I'd never met someone doing it. And especially not someone who was saying, I did this, then this, then this, then this. Well, we sold our townhouse that had a mortgage on it only a few months later. Bought this house, which looked nothing like this when we bought it. And because I had someone 10 steps ahead, I was mortgage free before my 30th birthday.
That's amazing. Wow. I just imagine that mortgage payments are like one of the biggest
stressors,
and it's a lifer. Like it's if you go at it the traditional way of how we see mortgages, that's a huge chunk of your income right there. So to be in your 30s and not have to, you can invest that. The freedom.
the freedom.
I like that, the 10 steps ahead, the 10 years younger. That's something that I've never looked at it the way you look at it, because I work with younger people as well, and they teach me every day. And a lot of people are knocking down the younger generations, but they're the ones who are going to get you into the future. They're the ones who are building that future. So they have a lot to teach us. And so I like the fact that it's 10 years older, 10 years younger, and 10 steps ahead. I love that.
Mm-hmm. It's great. All three have huge value to give to us. We just have to find them.
Yeah, I love that. We're going to talk about your book. It came out. It's been number one for quite some time. And then you're at the top of the charts. And can you talk a little bit more what's happening with the book too?
Yeah, so my book is Don't Snooze Your Dreams, Lessons from Life with Narcolepsy. It's a beautiful service dog on the front.
I know.
And it's part memoir, part self-help. It is, of course, my story of narcolepsy, but it's also so much more than that. Mm-hmm. It's a guide to help anyone, no matter what their challenges are, to turn their obstacles into opportunities, to make their dreams come true, and in a tangible framework, step by step, how to do that. And lots of funny stories and self-deprecating humor, of course.
Of course, have that in there. And I like the fact that it's for everybody. Anybody has a challenge. It doesn't have to be an actual medical diagnosis or anything. I mean, it does help, but it's transferable, and I love it. It's such a, it's beautifully written too. I love how you write.
Thank you.
And anything new, anything coming up for you, any new projects coming on? I mean, yeah, you did mention speaking. It's kind of that peak time for it, but anything else coming up?
Definitely. So my big goal is to speak on 100 stages within 2 years. And I think I'm at about 20 now.
That's amazing.
And Everything inside of me wanted to do 1 year, but that's that prioritization and self-care. Would it be possible? Yes. Is it a bad idea? Terrible. So this was my, it's still keep definitely busy, definitely a lot, but I want every time get just 1% better. It's that same mentality I have with everything. A little bit better, little step, little step, little step. And beyond that, my ginormous dream is I want a docuseries about training my next service dog. Right? It's so beautiful. It's so hard. It's so stressful. It's so funny. It's like a baby.
Yeah.
And you don't know if it's going to work out. You don't know, no matter how much you set yourself up for success in every way, it could still fail. Mm-hmm. And I think that the public knows a lot about seeing eye dogs. And I'm really grateful for that because they've paved the way for the rest of us. And I think that there's a lot that could be learned about how service dogs help people with other disabilities and what a huge impact they have on lives.
Yeah.
And what better way than, you know, we all love to binge our Netflix series.
Yes. Oh, I love that. I love how you incorporate Quinn in everything that you do. Like, she's an important part of your life. And she's not taking, you know, she's not working backstage. She's there up front and center. Sometimes she steals the show.
Sometimes. She's the star around here. I've accepted it.
She's so sweet. So I just love it. And before we wrap, I could talk to you all day, but I'm going to wrap it up. And before we share with people how they can follow you and how they can contact you if they want to work with you as well, is the infamous question that I ask everybody. And that's, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Even 6 months ago, I don't think I could have answered this. Mm-hmm. But what's become very clear to me is I will be someone like John Maxwell. He's in his late 70s now. He's built an entire speaking empire with an entire group under him of other people using his methodology so that the reach is tremendous. And he only has to speak a few times a year now. This man does not need another dollar, period. And I love when people don't have to be here. They're not forced to be doing what they're doing. They could be sitting on the couch doing nothing, but they choose to. And that is what I want to be when I grow up. I want to be the fully evolved version of what 34-year-old Michelle is, and doing it because I want to, and having trained other people to be able to share the message for the broadest reach.
I love that. And I love when it's a long-term vision like that, because we're constantly evolving, right? So to have that ultimate goal that can evolve with you, then you're always doing something you like. You're always doing something you're passionate about. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I could keep you on forever, but we'll definitely have you on again if you want to for the docuseries. I love that. But is there a way that people can reach you or follow you? And I'll put that in the description as well so they can go on your social medias. But can you share that with us?
So you can find us on Instagram. So Quinn is Dane on a Plane. And the same for TikTok. And you can find all the other links on my website, which is michellewieger.com. So you can find everything about books, speaking, Quinn updates, and more social media links.
That's awesome. And I'll put that in there. So thank you so much, Michelle, for coming on. I'm so happy you came on. We got to talk. And I learned some stuff along the way, which is great. I'm going to implement those as well.
Yay.
Thank you very much. And for everybody watching or listening, don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. Don't forget to start following Michelle and Quinn. We'll look for Dane on the Plane. She's amazing. And until next time, stay safe, stay awesome, and we'll talk soon.